kinsmen and princes of the mighty Persian Empire, I give to you the marvellous, the beautiful Queen Vashti. Princes and noblemen of the Persian Empire, I give to you the marvellous, the beautiful Queen Vashti. Where is she? What do you mean she's not coming? Is she ill? She's refusing to come. Well, I don't want to be the person telling the king that news. What? Okay, just give me 1 minute. I should probably explain. Who is Queen Vashti? That's what you really want to know. She was marvellous, and she was beautiful, and she was the wife of King Xerxes. And you probably want to know who King Xerxes is as well. Well, King Xerxes was the king of the mighty Persian Empire. And two things then you really need to know about King Xerxes are these. Firstly, he was one of the most powerful men in the known world. And secondly, he loved a party. He loved a banquet. He loved getting all of his mates around and all of the noblemen, all of the princes, and getting them in and displaying the most wonderful food, the most wonderful drink, all the things that he had, all the things that he owned, so that people could see how wonderful he was. At the same time as this, Queen Vashti also held a banquet for the ladies in a different place. But the time came when King Xerxes thought to himself, I have shown off all of my kingdom to these princes and noblemen, but I have not yet shown off my beautiful wife. And so he summoned Queen Vashti into his presence. But Queen Vashti refused to come. And King Xerxes was furious. And so he went to some of his advisors, some of the wise men, some of the explainers and teachers of the law, and said, what should I do? Well, King Xerxes, this is a very, very serious matter indeed. The problem is that Vashti has not come into your presence as you commanded her to do, and this could set a very bad example for the other wives of the kingdom, because if they hear about this and if their husbands summon them, maybe they won't come either. And that's going to cause chaos, anarchy. The kingdoms could fall. We need to deal with this very seriously indeed. Now, I have a couple of suggestions, if I may. Now, what I would like to suggest for you to do is to pass a law. And it'll be a law that can never be revoked. And it's very, very simple. It's very, very simple. All it is she must never come into your presence again. She will no longer be queen, and we will make someone else queen in her place. What do you think of that, King Xerxes? You like the idea? Brilliant. Okay, well, we'll just get that all drawn up and set up for you. And Queen Vashti will never again be allowed into your presence. We'll take the royal crown away from her, and we will find another queen instead. And so that's what happened. Queen Vashti was no longer Queen Vashti. She was now just Vashti. Eventually, King Xerxes, as he was sitting on his throne, he started to calm down. His anger went a little bit, but he realized there was something missing in his life. For all the things that he still had, he was now without a queen. And so again, one of his advisors came to him. He said, "Dear King, here's an idea. Why don't we do this? We will get all the most beautiful women in all the kingdom. We'll bring them to you, we'll prepare them over a long period of time, and eventually they will come and they will parade before you, and they will come and spend time with you, and you can choose which one out of all these wonderful, beautiful women you want to be your new queen." Xerxes liked this idea. And so it was done. And the women from all over the kingdom of Persia were brought in and prepared to come and see King Xerxes. Now, one of these women was a girl called Esther. And she had a cousin called Mordecai. And they were both Jews, part of God's special chosen people. And Esther had been chosen to go and see King Xerxes. And Mordecai had said to Esther, "This is very, very important. Whatever you do, don't tell anyone that you're a Jew. Just keep it quiet. Don't mention it." And Esther, because she trusted her cousin, she did exactly what he said. She didn't tell anybody that she was a Jew. Well, all these women brought before the king, before they could come and see the king, they had beauty treatments for a whole year. A whole year of beauty treatments. Some of them probably needed longer than that. But a whole year before they came and saw the king. And Esther was very wise because she took any advice that was given by the king's servants. Whatever they said for her to do, she did it. And the time came when she was brought before King Xerxes. And you know what? Out of all these different women, all these Persian women, King Xerxes picked Esther, the Jew, although he did not know that was where she came from, to be his new queen. And the royal crown was placed upon her head. Now, while this was going on, Mordecai used to sit down by the king's gate at the entrance to the citadel of Susa, the capital of Persia. This is where the king resided. And Mordecai would sit there because he tried to get updates and find out what was going on with Esther. Would she be chosen to become queen? And the great thing about sitting at the king's gate is you got to hear all the palace gossip, all the things that were going on. And one day he was sat there and he overheard two of the king's guards. They were speaking very quietly, but he could hear what they were saying. "Are you ready? I've got the sword. When's it going to be?" "Tomorrow night. Then King Xerxes will be king no more." There was a plot to assassinate the king. And Mordecai overhears what is going on. And he's able, because of his position with Esther, to get a message to her so that she can warn the king, so that these two guards can be arrested. And, well, they were. And for their plot to try and kill the king. And Esther pointed out to the king, it was, you know, this man, Mordecai, whoever he is, but Mordecai, and he was the one who told me about this plot on your life. And it was written down, as everything was, in the annals of the king, letting everyone know all the things that have happened to the king, all the things that he's done, all of it was written down and then filed away. But Mordecai had saved the king's life. Now let me introduce you to another person. And his name was Haman. And the king liked Haman very, very much. He was kind of the king's kind of man. And he gave Haman more honor than anyone else in the citadel of Susa and in the Persian Empire. And in fact, he gave him so much honor that he made a law which basically said, if you see Haman and Haman passes by you, you must bow down and pay him honor. That's what the king said. Now, Haman loved this. Because there he'd be sort of just walking along, walking through the citadel, and there would be someone perhaps by the king's gate or up alongside the streets, and they would see Haman straight away. They would prostrate themselves before him and give him honour. And everyone did this. They knew the king's law. They knew the king's commands. As soon as Haman came along, down on the floor, except for one person. And that man's name was Mordecai. He refused to bow down in front of Haman. He said, "I'm not going to do it." And people said to him, "It's the law, it's the rules, you've got to do it." And Mordecai said, "No, I'm not." And so people went up to Haman and said, "Haman, you know, everyone's meant to kind of, you know, bow down." Oh, sorry. "You know that everyone's got to bow down before you when they see you. Well, there's this this guy over here, and he's not doing it." "What? Everyone bows down before Me. Everybody. Who is he? Who's this man? Mordecai. Where's he from? He's a Jew. Well, I tell you what, he's a dead man. He's a dead man. And then, no, wait, no, he's not just him, but all the Jews. They are dead because he will not bow down to me. Haman was furious. And he went to King Xerxes and he said, King, let me tell you about some people who are living in your land. They're called the Jews. They call themselves God's chosen people. Okay, and they're scattered not just here in the citadel, in Susa. They're scattered all over the place. But you know what? They don't believe the things that we believe in. They don't follow our customs. They're just troublemakers. We should not tolerate them living here with us. Now, if you give me permission, what I'll do is I'll put a bit of money into the treasury for you. I'm a rich man. And if you give me permission, I'll go out and I will make sure that all these Jewish people are completely wiped out. There'll be plenty of people willing to do that job. You trust me. All of them. In the whole of the Persian Empire. We will find them. We will search them out. We will track them down. And we will annihilate the lot of them. King Xerxes really respected Haman and listened to Haman. And he said, okay, don't worry about the money though. Here's my signet ring. This gives you the authority to do whatever you want. Use this and send out letters that will give all the people in all the different areas of the Persian Empire the authority and the right to take up arms against the Jewish people and wipe them out totally. And so they cast a lot to work out on what day it was going to be, and it came out as being the 13th day of the 12th month. On that day, people would rise up and attack the Jews. Well, Mordecai heard about this. He heard everything sitting out there by the king's gate. And when he heard about what was going on, he couldn't eat. He tore his clothes. I'm not getting that dramatic. And he couldn't believe what was happening. And Esther heard about how upset Mordecai was. She heard about the fact that he wasn't eating. He was wearing ash on his head. And so she sent a message out to Mordecai and said, Mordecai, what's wrong? Why are you so upset? And so Mordecai sent the message back again, explaining to Esther what was going on. That all of her people, all of God's chosen people, were in danger of losing their lives because of Haman and his plan to wipe them out. And he sent a message back to Esther saying, look, you're the queen. Why don't you go and see the king and see if he can sort it all out for us? And so Esther then sent another message back to Mordecai saying, oh, there's a problem. Because whoever you are, you're only allowed to go and see the king if he summons you into his presence. Okay, if you go into his presence and he's not summoned you, then you're risking your life. The only way you can save your life is if the king raises up his golden scepter and points it towards you, because that means it's okay for you to come in. But if he doesn't do that and you go in unannounced, you go in on pain of death. If I was to go to the king, I would be risking my very life. And she sent this message back to Mordecai. And Mordecai read it. And he sent back another message to Esther. And he said, Esther, do you really think that just because you're the queen and you're in the palace, that you will escape the fate of everybody else? No, you won't. But also, think about this. Maybe you have been placed right here in this palace for such a time as this, so that you can save our people. Well, Esther thought about it, and she composed another letter to send back to Mordecai. And she said to Mordecai, what I want you to do, and all the Jews to do, is for 3 days, go without food and pray for me. And then after those 3 days, I will go and I will see the king. And so that's what happened. Mordecai and the Jews in the citadel, they went without food, they prayed. And 3 days later, Esther went to go and see the king. And the king was relaxing on his throne. It was a very comfy throne. And he was sat there, and Esther enters into his presence. She's standing there. And this is the moment. Will he raise the scepter or not? How was Esther feeling as she stood there? But as the king looks at Esther, his wife, the queen, he is pleased with her. And he takes his scepter in his hand and he raises it towards her and says, Esther, come in. What can I do for you? Anything you want. Anything up to half my kingdom, actually. But anything you want, I will give it to you. And Esther said, well, look, I tell you what. Why don't we have a nice banquet? And, hey, you can invite your really close friend, Haman, along to the banquet as well. And then maybe the banquet, then I'll tell you what it is that I want. Now, King Xerxes never needed too much persuasion when it came to putting a banquet together. And so he thought, this is a brilliant idea. So fantastic. Yes, we'll get Haman along and we'll have a wonderful banquet. And so they did. The best of food, the best of wine. And there was Haman and Esther and the king. And the king said, come on then, Esther, what is it? Tell me what is it that you really want me to do for you? And Esther said, well, look, I'll tell you what. I won't tell you now, but how about tomorrow we have another banquet? Well, king's liking this. And during that second banquet, then I will tell you what it is I really want. And so it was that a banquet was planned for the following day. Haman leaves and he goes home and he's in high spirits. He's been invited to a banquet by Esther and he's there with the king. And, you know, who else is there like Haman? And not only that, but he's being invited to a second banquet the next day. I mean, how fantastic is that? And he's walking home and he's walking down to the streets and there's people left, right and centre. But as he walks past Mordecai, Mordecai does nothing. And he looks into Mordecai's eyes and he sees no respect there, no honour. And Haman is furious. And he goes home, he's into his house, he slams the door, and his wife's there kind of trying to calm him down. And he's saying, I have everything, everything I could ever have wanted, and yet this one man, while he lives, everything else means nothing to me. Now, dear, can't be all that bad. Tell you what, I know what'll make you feel better. Why don't you have some gallows built? Yeah, say 75 feet high. Yeah, nice big ones. Yeah, you'll like that. And tomorrow morning, you could have Mordecai hung on the gallows. That'll make you feel better. Then you can go to the banquet tomorrow with the king, and you'll just be happy, and you'll be able to just enjoy the food. There. Haman loved this idea, and he had these gallows built already to have Mordecai hung on them the following day. Now, that night, the king had a problem. He was trying to sleep, but no matter how hard he tried, and no matter how much he turned over, he just couldn't get to sleep. He had to get up, and he did what many people do when they try to get to sleep, is he decided to do a bit of reading, and he opened up the book of the annals of the kings, all the things that he'd done, all the things that had happened in his reign. And he opened it up and he got to the bit about the two men who were trying to kill him and assassinate him and how this man Mordecai had reported it and saved his life. And the king called one of his attendants and he said, this Mordecai guy, did we do anything for him? Did we, you know, some food or anything? Did we give him any kind of honour at all? No, we didn't. King Xerxes said, well, tell you what, who's in the court at the moment? Go and get me someone from the court. Now, Haman had just entered into the king's courts because he was all prepared, all set up to say, King, I want Mordecai hung on my gallows tomorrow morning. And the king summoned Haman into his presence. Haman, I need a favour. I need you to help me out a little bit here. What should I do for the man that the king delights to honour? Yes, for me, isn't it? Well, King, the man you'd like to honour, eh? Well, I think you should maybe get a robe, maybe one of your top robes, I like that one, that you've worn, and you put that on him, and maybe you get him to ride on a horse that you yourself have ridden on, maybe the brown and grey speckled one, that one's very nice. And then you have someone, maybe one of your noblemen or princes, and they will lead him through the streets of Susa, and they'll be proclaiming in a loud voice, "This is what is done for the man the king delights to honour." How about that? And the king said, "Haman, that's a brilliant idea. What I want you to do is to go and do that for Mordecai." And Haman took the robe, and he took the horse, and he led Mordecai through the streets of Susa. "This is what's done for the man the king delights to honour." And he went home, and he was full of grief and rage. And again his wife came to him, and she said to him, "Hello, dear. I really think that you need to rethink what you're doing here. This man, Mordecai, he's of Jewish origin, and you're trying to stand up against these God's special people, and I think it's just going to end badly. It's all going to come to ruin." But before Haman could reply or say anything, along came some of the servants of the king to take him away to the second banquet that had been prepared. And so here's the king, and here's Esther, and here's Haman, and once again the best of food and the best of wine. And the king says to Esther, "Esther, please tell me this time, what is it? What's wrong? What do you want me to do? Anything, up to half my kingdom, it'll be yours." And Esther said, "King, I am in great distress because of my people. They are in danger of being wiped out. An order has been given. They'll be completely annihilated. And I cannot, how can I possibly be happy knowing that this is going to take place? You know, if we'd just been sold into slavery, well, I could perhaps live with that. But this is men and women and children being completely wiped out. King, can you help?" The king said, "Who would do such a thing like that?" "Well, actually, it's Haman over there." And the king was so furious that he couldn't even look at Haman. He left the room, and Haman realized that now at this point his life hangs by a thread. The only person who can possibly help him is Esther. And as Esther is reclining on the couch, eating her food, here comes Haman. "Esther, please have mercy. Help me." And at this point, as he's over the top of Esther, the king comes in and he sees Haman. "Will you even molest her in my own palace?" And no sooner have the words left the king's mouth than Haman's head is covered and he is taken away. And the 75-foot gallows that were built to hang Mordecai are instead used to hang Haman. And Esther comes clean and she reveals her origin. She tells of her relation to Mordecai. And she says to the king, "King, what can you do to save my people?" "Well, the law has been given. The order has been given the 13th day of the 12th month to send people out to attack the Jews. They can't change that." But the king takes off his signet ring, and summoning Mordecai into his presence, he gives it to Mordecai and says, "You set a new rule, a new law to save your people. You do whatever you see fit." And so a new law was sent out. But this time, on the 13th day of the 12th month, the Jewish people were able to rise up, arm themselves, and fight back against their oppressors with the full support of the king. And not only that, but many of the king's noblemen and princes and commanders supported the Jewish people in this. The tables were being turned. The letters went out that any of the Jewish people could stand and fight and defeat those who would seek to annihilate them. And so on the 13th day of the 12th month, that is exactly what happened. As those who went out to try and destroy the Jews and plunder all their goods and take all their possessions, instead the Jewish people fought back with the support of the Persian Empire. And these people were defeated. The Jews didn't steal their goods or plunder their goods. That's not what they were about. But they're about defending themselves. Many lives were lost on that day. In many ways, a dark chapter in history. But at the same time, a chapter of hope. And for the Jewish people, joy and peace. Their sorrow had been turned into joy. Because their people were going to survive and live. And Mordecai and Esther were held in such high regard by Xerxes and by all the Persian Empire. Mordecai was seen as a man of great honor by all people, but particularly by the Jewish people, that he had stood up for what he believed in. And Esther had stood up for what she believed in. Which meant that the people would not be annihilated, but instead would live on. And on the 14th day of the 12th month, and on the 15th day of the 12th month, there would be celebrations. So that year after year, it would never be forgotten what Mordecai and Esther did. In the face of all of God's people being wiped from the face of the earth, that instead the tables were turned and they survived and sorrow had turned into joy. Mourning had turned into rejoicing, all because of two people. And those two people had such a massive impact on that situation. God, many years before, had promised to a guy called Abraham and had promised to a guy called Moses and had promised to God's people that they would be his people and he would be their God and that through them all nations would be blessed. And if Haman had his way and all the people were wiped from the face of the earth, though that promise would have come to nothing. But God always keeps his promises. He always keeps his promises to his people. And because of just two ordinary people, one man, one woman, but who are placed at the right time, in the right place in that palace, because of that, God was able to use them to work out his promises and to work out his purposes. And as we look at the story of Esther, and we are perhaps excited by it, thrilled by it, challenged by it, then hopefully we will take that away with us. Two people in the right place at the right time, and God uses them to work out his faithful promises, and he can do exactly the same with us as well.